Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me today from Florida is Gabe Imperato. Gabe is a managing partner of the Fort Lauderdale office of the law firm Nelson Mullins Broad and Cassell. He's an HCCA SCCE board member, a past president, and for this conversation, what's significant is he's one of the architects of the Board Audit Committee Compliance Conference. Gabe, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Adam, for inviting me.
You're more than welcome, and thanks for all your help with the meeting. And we're going to be talking today about government. We're going to be talking today about governance issues. Let's start with something. While most compliance people are familiar with the idea that the board needs to exercise some oversight over compliance, it's not a nice to have, but a real necessity. Can you briefly recap some of the direction out of the government on the topic?
Sure. Starting generally with the requirements for an effective compliance program as enunciated by the United States Sentencing Commission, board oversight is one of the essential elements for an effective compliance program. And in addition to that, we've seen enforcement efforts fall behind the concept of board oversight and the importance of the tone at the top for compliance oversight. And we've seen that take a number of different iterations. For example, in the healthcare industry, when there are settlements of criminal and civil healthcare fraud matters with organizations who participate in federal health programs, it will result in the Office of Inspector General of Health and Human Services coming behind that settlement matter and requiring organizations to obligate themselves to integrity obligations in an actual agreement as a condition for continuing participation in federal healthcare programs. And in those documents, we have seen increasing focus on board oversight for compliance in the form of requirements for board training, in requirements for certification of compliance with certain aspects of effective compliance programs. We've even seen requirements for boards to hire a compliance expert so that they can conduct oversight with knowledge and experience that the government considers essential for an effective compliance programs. And these types of requirements have been accumulating for years. And of course, boards have really had to take notice of them and beef up their compliance oversight efforts.
Yeah, and certainly it's every settlement's a good warning of what to be thinking about. And in addition to what you've pointed out with these settlements in the criminal division at the DOJ's, it's questions for evaluating compliance programs. I think one of the things that was notable about it was that it asked what kind of compliance expertise is available on the board, not to the board, but actually on the board itself. One of the things also, though, that I've said was it's been interesting to see of late is that boards have started to think a little bit more proactively about this. We've looked at there's been several CEO departures in the last month as we're recording this in July of 2018 that were based on code of conduct violations by the CEO. These were not violations of law. This was not management issues, but it was specifically about behavior. Do you think it's a trend that boards are starting to really take the code of conduct and its oversight in that area much more seriously?
Yeah, and I think it's driven by the fact that deviations from the code of conduct, especially by C-suite managers of organizations, can result in considerable reputational damage to the organization. And many of the organizations we're talking about participate in segments of American industry or global industry where reputational damage can be a very serious compromise of their ability to, you know, successfully conduct their business. So this becomes an increasing concern, even maybe exceeding the concern of financial damage in a direct way, and therefore I think that trend will continue because it is an important part of the fabric of what these business organizations have to contend with.
Yeah, it's often overlooked that reputational damage is really expensive. I mean, I still think about when I was in public in marketing advertising, people would talk from public relations perspective of the value of news coverage that was positive is if you calculate what the by the same measures the value of negative news coverage that's very expensive. So with boards getting more active, compliance people have to be better prepared to give them information they need. What data should compliance officers be telling their boards to enable them to help understand what's going on in the company from a compliance perspective?
Well, I think one is they should be telling the board about reports of non-compliant activity. How many are we getting? What kinds of reports are we getting? Are they the kinds of reports that are enabling the organization to address the known the major, risk areas that the organization contends with? How are we resolving these matters? And then, to some extent, trying to place on that a return on investment, which is always somewhat of a challenge. But typically, if an organization is able to induce communication and reports of non-compliant activity at a significant rate, their ability to address it and reduce the potential financial damage or reputational damage that might occur as a result of that activity is maybe immeasurable, but essential, for an organization today.
And along that line, as you're giving data, obviously you want to be getting something back from the board in terms of feedback, support, whatever. What should compliance people be asking their boards to ensure that the compliance program is fully able to, do its job, support the business, but also ensure that the organization's operating lawfully and ethically?
Well, I think compliance, your chief compliance officer, your compliance professionals need to have an organic understanding of what the major drivers of business are for the organization, what are the major drivers and of revenue for the organization on a priority basis, and then be able to identify the risks in that activity, and thereby support the business of the organization by managing those risks through an effective compliance program. I think it's as simple as that.
Okay. So what about those cases where you're a compliance officer in an organization where the board still just doesn't get it, hasn't woken up to the risk? What should compliance officers in those organizations be doing to try and get the board to realize it has to be actively involved and support the compliance and ethics program?
Well, what I've seen done over the years are a couple of things. One, your compliance officer or compliance professionals can communicate to the board analogous case situations involving other organizations that are similarly situated to your organization that have suffered the consequences of not managing the risk and trying to, line up what those cases were about, how they affected the organization, and really sending a message to the board of, if you don't manage these types of risk, this can happen to you tomorrow. I've seen that approach taken. Sometimes that doesn't work either. Okay. What I've seen in the healthcare space that works very well is the consequences of a whistleblower case and the resulting financial and reputational damage that can occur to an organization that becomes, a victim of one of those cases or a defendant in one of those cases. And fortunately or unfortunately, in the healthcare space, like in the defense industry, this risk is not a remote risk, and almost all organizations are affected by it. So it tends to definitely demonstrate to the board their need for compliance oversight and managing those risks. Sometimes, you know, that can have a very important effect. But even with that, sometimes I still run across organizations today that should know better but don't know better about compliance risk, and it can be a challenge for compliance professionals to communicate how important it is to manage that risk and to make sure that the board is cognizant of what's going on to manage the risk.
Yeah, it's always a challenge. I mean, there's always those who believe, you know, it's not going to happen to me, or you're being dramatic and we have to wait and see, and until unfortunately gloom and doom forecasts that they've dismissed suddenly are upon them.
I have one other thing to say,
sure,
by the way, in connection with that last question. Adam, as you know, we've tried to develop a curriculum and an educational resource for board members and C-suite managers by our longstanding board audit and compliance conferences each year. And we continue to try to do that. I think that the SCCE, HCCA board audit and compliance conferences are the one place that I'm aware of that's devoted exclusively to training board members for compliance oversight. We've tried to improve that offering and that conference education year in and year out. And next year we'll be moving to a combined two-day board audit and compliance conference for SCCE and HCCA members, and hope to reach another benchmark for the excellence of that program for board oversight.
Yeah, thanks, Gabe, for pointing that out. I think it's going to be a big step forward, and you know, for the upcoming SCCE one too. I mean, with the increased attention being played both in settlements from the DOJ's direction, and even the activities by those boards who have, you know, taken the steps recently to dismiss, I think we're up to four or five CEOs for code of conduct violations in the last month or two. It's definitely time to focus on those kinds of issues much more. Well, thanks, Gabe, for taking the time today to talk to us. Thank you for your help. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspectives.